Hakikaten kulüp.
Good morning, colleagues. It's 10 o'clock in Kulilekwa. Do we have a reasonable number to committee?
Yes, we
have a reasonable number. Are there any apologies for today's meeting?
From our side, on SECOC Chair, there are no apologies. On the SCOP side, it's only Mr. Vessel.
Fine. So shall we get going? Colleagues, comrades, welcome to the meeting. I need to draw your attention, as Parliament requires me to the protocols and the use of the virtual system. Obviously, members, you have to remain muted and off the video until you choose to speak. You know, to connect through either putting your hand up or through the participant chat system to say you'd like to speak. In Kulilekwa and Alan and whoever else will assist them will draw attention to the committee chairs as to who is available to speak or wants to speak. Also, people, we plead with you, colleagues, to keep your video off and your audio off until you're going to speak. And we urge those who are speaking to put both their mic and the audio visual system on. So welcome everybody. Just explain that in fact in the last term, the fifth term of Parliament, SCOF at the time, especially in the last 3 years, began to focus increasingly on the importance of the digital economy and the need to be taxed effectively as we began to move increasingly into the fourth industrial revolution, artificial intelligence, and increasingly e-commerce and the like. So we required the SARS and National Treasury at each of its quarterly reports to report on both progress on illicit trade and the taxing and processing of the digital economy. And while they focused a lot on the first in every quarterly report, the second, digital economy, did sort of fall off the radar screen every now and then. So for this term, SCOF has decided, together with us ourselves, SCOF, that's the select committee, that we will focus more regularly on it. Please understand, colleagues, this is nearly the first attempt in this term to focus on this matter. We're not going to cover all the issues. It's a brief meeting just for us to get a sense. And in fact, what had happened was the initial idea was we'll only take a submission from the PBO today, which is why we kept it to 2 hours, half an hour for the PBO, and an hour and a half for discussion. But late yesterday afternoon, through engagement with Treasury, they decided they too will participate. We SARS will, and I think SARS is here. In Kulilekwa, is Thomas here? Or some other representative of SARS or Treasury?
I saw Young as chair.
Ah, so it's Young and Puta. Okay, so she'll speak to this. We wanted to avoid Treasury coming in now, or SARS, because of the preparations for the supplementary budget. But given that they're here, we've allocated 30 minutes to each of the representatives of these two institutions to speak, and then it's an hour for discussion. Given that we have two submissions, perhaps we can spill over the 12 o'clock deadline, if in fact in Kulilekwa to negotiate that with Parliament's ICT people. So over then to, I think, Dumisane, you're on first, right? But before I hand over to you, the co-chair might want to say something. In terms of the understanding between the chairs for today, as we had been putting this on our agenda for some while now, as a possible item this term, primarily, and he'll come in as and when appropriate. Moreover, he will bring the meeting to a close and do the summary and whatever else is necessary. But that's now, I'll start with you, Chairperson. Do you want to say something?
No. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Not for now, towards the end of the meeting. I think so far, so good. You can proceed with the presiding over the meeting.
Okay, yes. Good. 30 minutes, Dumisani, no more. And colleagues, you reminded up to 3 minutes. You don't have to use all 3 minutes, especially as it's a limited space today. And it's merely the first of several, you know, discussions and engagements we'll have on this issue. Thank you. Over to you, Dumisani.
Thanks so much, Chair. I'm trying to make sure that I'm clear. Can you hear me, Chair?
Hello? You know, fine, we'll intervene if we're not. Go ahead. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I'm just trying to load my presentation. Thank you so much, Chair, for the opportunity for us to present to the Joint Committee good opportunity for us to present in that. Yes, you're right, Chair. I think there's been a lot of discussions in the Fifth Parliament on innovation in trying to increase more revenue for the country and also...
Excuse me, Dubisani. Sorry about this. Let's ask other people in part of this meeting. Is it just me or is it us more generally who are having difficulties hearing you clearly? In Nkululeko, can you help?
Also can't hear him clearly. There is an echo.
Yeah, but it's also a bit fuzzy and blurry what you're saying. It's like we can't hear everything. We can hear you, but through like a smudge sort of tone, you know.
We can't hear clearly.
Okay, can you hear me now?
It's
slightly better. All right, thank you so much. I was saying, giving context that yes, there has been discussions. I think in the office as well. We've been part of discussion on digital economy and largely in terms of the phase erosion, profit shifting and so on. And I think the issue of digital economy came in later as well. And we've done some work. I think, I just want to introduce myself. I'm with my colleague as well, who are on the platform at this stage. I'll be doing the presentation and they'll come in later in the questions time. The outline of our presentation, of course, I wanted to start to indicate that this brief that is done for the committee is in response to the 2019 November request from the committee for more work or research work analysis to inform some of the committee's deliberations with regards to digital economy. And I think it is within that background this brief provides members of parliament with a novel view of some of the issues around digital economy and implications for tech. Purposes, some of tax policy, and also offer some thinking and what has been done elsewhere, and also give context what South Africa has been doing, and also what's been the literature and some of the developments globally on in terms of how tax policy ought to be reformed in terms of realizing that a major part of global economy has continued to be digitalized in that. So it's within that context that this presentation this brief we give to this content committee, and we really appreciate the opportunity co-chaired in this regard. Within context before, we talk about, we've seen that the outbreak of the has led to shutdown around the world, and this has affected global supply chain, leading to simultaneous attack on supply and demand side of economy. Many economic sectors forced to close while others have been able to operate online and over the digital platform. And this is happening at the backdrop of having realized over the years that online shoppers have doubled globally since the 2008 global financial crisis. Seeing business to business to consumers e-commerce transaction having grown to 8 trillion from 80 trillion. That shows that, but also showing that the combined market value of digitalized multinational enterprises has also grown so huge over the years since the global financial crisis to more than 130 trillion globally. We're picking from 9.2 trillion back then. And also recently, more recently, within 2 months of COVID-19 lockdowns, we've seen from March, we've seen technology on an online-oriented multinational enterprise accounting for more than 70% of the market the very creative stock market. It shows that there's been a lot of activities and there's certainly a lot of investment in this area, as many are realizing a way of how many of the business opportunities will continue to grow in that area. And also studies also about Africa have also shown that South Africa's online shopping also is expected to grow in line with the global trend. Global multinational enterprises operating the country, as well as Facebook and Google, are expected to peak in the advertising revenues in the country. And also during the announcement of the lockdown risk level 4 by the Minister Patel, did note as well that there is concern that allowing e-commerce to take place will certainly disadvantage some of the small enterprises and foreigners who less access to shell platform that regard. That shows that the importance or the realization that actually more of economies are continuously growing towards being digitalized. And therefore, the continued growth in the digital economy is expected to disrupt societies that we've seen around the world already, and also affect how governments work. And of course, that we've seen over the recent months. And the effect of COVID-19 has also inspired the conversation to say, how do we make sure that the society is get entire stuff that would be the transition of economy and in this regard. One example also, which I want to bring context to, earlier in the year, I think I've mentioned that during the budget discussion in February, that we came across a story by a local businesswoman in Cape Town who runs the BNB there, who was concerned that who also purported to share the views of the industry she's operating in Cape Town. She was worried that allowing online or digital oriented business models operating in their sector without subjecting them to similar rules and taxes and mechanisms will certainly lead to an unfair advantage, leading to them closing, as she said, most of things are closing because of these online-oriented businesses. Laying off people, of course, as a result, that will lead to lower revenue by the local government and so on. And also we've seen, as Chairperson was saying, the concerns raised by the committees around the escalation of the situation of economic activities, trying to understand what are the implications and whether our policy legislative framework has been geared up to really take into account some of these developments in that regard. And it's within this context to try to give more information to ensure the engagement of the side take that into consideration. Coming back to the section where what we're doing is trying to summarize some of the understanding. Of course, there's been common, understanding or one way that defines digital economy, so different, and I was just trying to contextualize it as well for the conversation in this regard. I think over the past three decades or so, we've seen a rapid growth growth in technology, business, technology-oriented businesses, which led largely to growth. So some of these businesses operate within online platforms of different countries, which have seen them growing and largely driven by the significant growth in global digital data over the years, and studies by United Nations agencies also shown that actually there has certainly been a huge growth in digital data over the past decade. It's shown an example there that around early 90s, you've seen that the global digital exchange recorded 100 gigabytes exchange per day. And fast forward 30 years time, expected that there will be 150,000 digital data exchange per second. And clearly, that shows that there has been huge growth in digitalization of economies, largely driven by availability of digital economy. And of course, some of these studies was before the COVID-19, which we have seen, like today we are within a platform, saying there's a lot of data being exchanged online, which normally would have been where in the prison, working there, and clearly has to be some considerations in policy, in in this regard, or in Texas, and whichever conflict you're trying to put in place to address some of the inequalities in society. And advancement of the tech-led business activities has largely led to a significant part of the production and consumption of goods and services to be more digital. So as part of the normal production of goods and services, part of it as a result of business models and so on, has led to a significant part of that being largely digitalized in the regard, and the expansion thereof, as I said, is still largely by the availability of data. But I think what is more important is realizing that the availability of data in alone is not enough. But we need to have the digital data transform and process it, able to commercialize it. It's also more important where we've seen many of the countries have not been quite strong in that regard. As I'm saying that, largely the ability to collect, store, analyze, and transform this digital data into a market intelligence or to commercialize it is a major part of creating value for many businesses within the digitalized economic world. For example, let's say, I'll take a simple way, you all know Facebook, where we always log in and do all of these things in Facebook. The actual analyzing our preferences and able to analyze it and recommend to us advertise products that we'd like to purchase and from all different countries at any time. And so that ability to have that data and use it to create really very important part of the discussion on taxation in this regard. And unfortunately, many developing countries are in general lack such capacity or part of capacity to actually create value from the digitalization of availability of digital data. And that capacity and present huge implications for many societies, like in a developing country, and also the regulatory framework in terms of saying how do we determine that, how do we create value, also tax practices, how do we determine where we can create that we can generate much more revenue. And that should, of course, seen largely as an opportunity for policy innovation, creativity, seeing the policy space, say, how do we go about regulating space, also ensuring that we protect local businesses, and also ensuring that the taxes are tax-based according to this regard. And moving back, I'm just trying to summarize the understanding of digital economy. Coming back to taxation, globally, I mean, governments around the world have seen accelerated decline in tax revenue post 2008 global financial crisis, not meaning that there wasn't a problem then, and that this acceleration has seen many governments actually looking for measures to try to close the gaps that were seen to be abused by multinational enterprises then, or even in the international tax system, which led to the G20 OECD tax project, which set out some of the mechanisms required to see how can the international tax system be reformed to close such gaps that were leading to abuse by some of the multinational enterprises. And of course, the 2014 DEF project set out some of the outcomes, produced some outcomes, which might largely have not been fully implemented. Some of them have been, despite some clear mechanism where tried to deal with some of the taxation within digital economy industry. As a result of delay in realizing the objectives of the OECD project, the calls continue for a more multilateral, or even in many cases, unilateral approaches or domestic policy approaches to deal with taxation within the digital economy. And this is largely as a result of seeing massive global inequality, and more so seeing how developing countries are largely affected by some of the income inequalities led by the transformation in economic activity. I think the main concern in the current international tax system is how effective it's been in raising revenue in the digitalized world, digital economy, and also how has it been effective in terms of addressing the challenges of abuse by many multinational enterprises, and clearly looking at experiences of major urban countries by losing revenues indicates that setting a need to reform the international tax regime as it is to make more fit for the current environment. Because, I mean, we have to realize that the current international tax system was developed in a different economic context altogether. I think what is, there hasn't been largely a huge shift or huge structural change in the international tax system as it was created back then. And you know, the context was different. You know, we have a different context now. You know, the sort of consensus prevailed actually in the current system is not suitable as it's advantage many of the countries, more so developing countries. In particular, in related to digital economy, the current international tax system fails to fairly determine which countries should be taxed in digital economy or which country creates value. You know, because tax is about where value is created. Where value is created, how do we tax that value creation? And within digital economy, the challenge is that it's so complicated that you find that demand and cross-production operations can take place without necessarily, you know, being there or being in a particular country, create value and being take away that value. And I think the system, in a way, because there's so much legal reform oriented, where multinational enterprises are able to choose which jurisdiction tax purposes, as opposed to using the commercial or kind of activities as a measure to determine, you know, this is where the value is created and this is where the taxes or tax base should be actually recognized. And I think that's a bigger challenge in this regard. And I think the realization by OECD as well that you know, there's a need for reform in the international system also giving a lot of hope you know, for many countries and also which are members of the NCC. Look, as it is now, it's the big loophole recognizing that we have created over the different contexts altogether. One other approach that is also being considered, which is sort of a mainstay of some of the OECD initiatives in literature, is also where you look at the revenue generated by a multinational enterprises at the global level and start to reallocate that revenue based on economic activity. You say, look, this is Facebook generated revenue all over the countries, all over the world, of course, through subsidies in different countries, and recognize the revenue and say that revenue can now be allocated based on where largely revenue has been created, as opposed to where they choose to say, look, I'm going to be taxed by that particular jurisdiction or so. So that's the principle of unitary taxation, which also, of course, the formula, which requires different understanding, but more requires more analysis and so on. But I think the principle of the OECD initiated, drafted, is based on the principle of recognizing unitary taxation principle. And it is seen as a huge progress development in the international tax system, as it certainly move away in a way the shift in terms of how we recognize revenue or value creation in the cross-border system in that regard. Okay, I think I'll move quickly. Coming back to South African situation, what has been happening and so on, I think you know, continuous debate about effect of the digital economy is yet to lead to a significant change in tax policy. But there's been a lot of discussion. I mean, it dates back to early in 2000, where in a green paper on e-commerce, government has actually recognized that there will be there are concerns that the growth in digital economy in an absence of proper tax measures to lead to loss of revenue in that regard, and of course, making some of the reasons that there are some inherent limitations and so on. And of course, also seen over the years, in around 2014, South Africa introducing being one of the first countries to introduce tax on consumption of digital e-commerce transactions, which has led to additional revenue generated and also more taxpayers being registered within the tax authority. However, we have yet to initiate a process of developing tax mechanisms to generate revenue, generate tax revenue from income within the digital economy, which of course Africa we have over the years been part of the participated in OECD processes, and we are still waiting for the OECD, as I understand, some discussion to finalize the process of this framework, which will be one of the mechanisms used by many countries to impose taxes in a digitalized economy. However, we've seen continuously in the local industries complaining about lack of that the system, the current tax system is discriminatory towards them, as they are tax contributors, whereas the global counterparts have paid the contributor fair share in that regard. And I think now it's more profound now when we see how many businesses closed down, unable to operate, yet some of their counterparts are able to shake up. And of course, there's two sides to this argument, where you say they should also innovate or grow and get skills. But of course, it's a very, as we've shown, that developing countries most of the time left behind in some of these capacities in this regard. So in a way, lack of suitable tax for digital economy is an advantage for multinational enterprises operating in the same space, to leading to them complaining. And it's been a couple of years, much choice, very concerned about next. Please. Of course, there's lots about regulation, regulatory framework, but also it talks some of the taxes and how much of that has been, you know, picked up by the system. Of course, also given that the South Africa, like many other developing countries, I think it's very important to also highlight this point, that South Africa, like many other developing countries, rely so much on income tax as source of our main revenue tax. That's very important to realize that any activities that affect that space will certainly lead to lowering or decline in that sector. So hence the discussion is around ensuring that we have mechanisms that continue to prop up or maintain that level of revenue in the space, you know, will be important. As that table tried to show that actually over the years, about 55% of government revenue comes from income tax, and also seen over the years, you know, income tax from corporations declining as a share of the entire territory. Of course, given that the declining income tax economic activities in business and corporate economic activities, and also that more businesses are more digitalized, there are certainly many governments considering tax and revenue in this. And as I said earlier on, even at the multilateral level. But again, what has come up strongly, there's a lot of divergence from the international approach, where many countries are opting for the intergovernmental approach or approaching this within their own domestic policy, which of course creates a bit of challenges in terms of ensuring that we have capacity to be able to their policies, implement and monitor and enforce and so on within that space, opposed to a multinational space being unique to the country. And also, I mean, of course, the challenges in getting to the space, you know, when you look at the literature discussion, like first, you know, countries, how they're going around considering a unilateral approach in this area. They see it as an opportunity to actually strengthen state capacity in the rapidly transforming digitalized world, digital economic world. And of course, South Africa is part of some of these multinational agencies, which we can also use as a way of tapping in capacity in order to develop mechanisms of taxing revenue in digitalized economy. Apart from income tax and consumption tax, South Africa could also be generating additional revenue from custom duties on cross-border digitalizable economic activities. But due to a moratorium that was put in place in 1998 by WTO on imposing custom duties on these realizable these cross-border services. It has led to member states of WTO paying back for imposing customs duties. And of course, there's been a lot of discussion over the years in terms of how to remove that. And of course, it is dealing for the embargo or the declaration not so, so large groups say, look, there's a still have an understanding what it means to impose taxes on these transactions. So while the customs duties over this issue with a different understanding of this agreement and the WTO imposed the tariffs, we're going to discuss. But the discussion has been going on for so long, unfortunately, as a result, we have the country and many other developed countries losing out on potential additional revenue in that regard. But I think one of the reasons why you see that the companies operating within this space, revenue has also grown quite a lot globally, like on average 30% in 10 years, and clearly that could have also translated in additional more revenue in custom. But I think the reason why also we put this chair on that is that realization that as part of oversight, government is doing a lot of work trying to push back or get the moratorium. South Africa and India has been working a lot behind trying to actually remove or forcing WTO member states to actually concede to removing their moratorium. And that's in the consideration as part of the oversight in this regard. Quickly coming back to international experiences on taxation in this regard, of course, as I emphasized earlier, a need for reforming the international tax rules has long been recognized. And of course, as I said earlier, it's escalated quite well. The world financial crisis. And of course, we've seen now recently OECD-led initiative drafted in this framework, which is based on principle of internationalization, which has two pillar approaches. The first pillar would focus on reallocating taxation rights on taxable income that would have been regarded as unfairly being shifted from rightful jurisdictions. But of course, the big part that which comes largely from smaller countries, regional countries that some of the provisions allows exclusion of some of the major sectors into that space, which creates a bit of problem with many countries.
Jimmy Sadi, you're about 30 minutes, but we'll give you a few more minutes. Please round up. Thanks.
Okay.
You're always okay. Back, yeah. Thanks.
Okay, all right. Of course, and that's, of course, despite this OECD drafted initiative, we've seen many countries actually diverging from that process, going on their own to develop their own policies. So those are the main reasons raised by these countries that why they are opting to diverge from OECD approach to get their own policy, own natural measures to try to test the digital economy. I'll just leave those and just quickly show also a table some of the countries which have actually opted for their own unitary policies to test the digital economy. Of course, but why I highlighted this thing is the interest we realize that actually out of these 38 countries, 20 out of 32 of these countries are OECD member states. So they are diverging from their own block to actually go ahead. Of course, I'm going to put that, but it's quite significant to notice that the current OECD framework has been undermined by some of these processes. Of course, there's some consideration there in terms of what we have considered in terms of this opting for unilateral approaches to taxing revenue in this digitalized economy. And some of the reasons are those ones. For cause of this business, the delays in getting consensus, it means more revenue is being lost in the process and many other reasons. Quickly going back to summary, Chair, given the time, what we say is that over the years, over the past 3 decades, we've seen global economy rapidly digitalized. But unfortunately, the impact on social community has been varied largely with small countries having been the brunt of or having getting the raw stick of it. And the expansion of this economy is driven largely by availability of digital data globally, and ability to commercialize our data with many different countries, lack of capacity, and that whole process has started societies and governments' ability to raise revenue. And therefore, there's a need for innovation and rethinking in terms of how the national economic policies and some of the frameworks are able to close the gap in that regard. Because failure to do so will actually accelerate economic inequalities and bring down some of the important human and economic development in this regard. That, of course, you know, very important to highlight that international tax system is intended to ensure fair allocation of tax and rights. It also ensure cooperation in jurisdictions, also ensure creativity of the system because business like stability. That's why it was created in this place. But therefore, in reforming, you know, there needs to be understanding of the challenges that are faced by some of the small countries in reforming the system. South Africa is one of the countries that has long discussed the issues of digital economy, and of course, challenges that are faced by tax measures, and also has intervened by introducing debt on some of these transactions. However, we still haven't seen the measures on taxing revenues in the digital economy introduced. As a result, the potential of tax income has been lost. There's also an issue around the moratorium on customs duties from WTO, which leads to more loss in revenue. And of course,
you know, people have got this slide presentation, I think, on Thursday last week. So can you round up? But people also complaining you're getting very fuzzy again. Somebody suggested you take out your earphones and use the laptop microphone instead.
Okay. Well, I'm done now.
More time. People have read this. Thank you.
All right. So, yeah, I'm done. I mean, I think the point of
harassment, but, you know, we've squeezed for time. Right. Now we have National Treasury here and SARS. Perhaps Treasury could start first to tell us where's the process in respect of policy. And SARS, what are you actually doing to tackle some of the issues just raised by the PBO and others that the committee has raised over time, and yet others have raised in civil society? So who's first? Is it is Momo still around?
Yeah, I'm here, Chair.
Okay, between you, you've got 30 minutes, right? Please observe the time, and you'll distribute it the way you think appropriate. But we want to hear from SARS as well, Momo. You'd focus more on policy, presumably. They focus on what they're doing and some ideas on policy, perhaps. Over, Momo, to you.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for Dumisani's presentation, which I think raises a lot of the issues. I think the point to note with digital taxation, I think the point is made that, you know, increasingly the world is getting more and more digitized. And the point is that if you want to tax, we need to go beyond the current situation where companies are physically in your country and generating revenue, and therefore you can tax them. Once you get to the digital world, to make the obvious point, you get into other jurisdictions, and therefore you rely on others. And to get others to, even if you conceive of a tax, to collect your taxes is generally not on, and requires all kinds of agreements. And that, Chair, is the reason why when you look at the digital world, when you're a small player like South Africa, we can't really go and do this unilaterally. If you do, you're going to get countervailing actions, as we've seen with France. France got frustrated also with the long delay in imposing these taxes. We're all outraged that companies that do digital commerce kind of are also very good at not paying their taxes. But when France, for example, announced that it was going to tax, you immediately had the U.S. threatening to take action. So they too have kind of pulled back from implementing. So at the moment, it's a lot of talk, and that's why I think the process in the OECD is the one that South Africa has been strongly part of. The G20 has supported this approach for us to have a more comprehensive approach to digital taxation. And I should add, I don't know if Yanga has managed to get on, but Yanga is a key player there, and South Africa has been a key player in both the BAPS process where this was identified, as well as in this particular task team that or working group that you have within the OECD, where South Africa is very, very active and trying to ensure we get a quick resolution internationally. Having said that, and I think you will see that South Africa has also been, in a sense, one of the first countries that took action, certainly on VAT, and perhaps South can expand on that. But yeah, so this is just to introduce. So,
have we lost him?
Best to design the. Hi. Okay. I'm saying that the challenge with any digital taxation is it's obviously one thing for us to want to tax it, which we are totally determined to do. But the other, and it's not just an administrative issue, it's a question of how do you actually ensure there's sufficient global cooperation or agreement to actually be able to enforce theoretically also what we want to get. Yanga, are you here? Okay.
Can you continue in the meanwhile, and then Yanga can come in when she's in. She'll let us know. You monitor that, please. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. No, but I'll stop there. Let me wait for, I don't know if anyone else from the trade wants to come in briefly if Yanga is not here.
Anyone else in NT? No? Okay. Can we move to Saad, please? Is Thomas? Yeah.
Yes, France is here and he's ready to respond.
Okay. So, France, yes. Please do.
Great. Thank you, Chair. So, you have the brief paper we were asked to prepare as to what SARS has been doing. And I think MoMA has already touched on several of the practical issues that we can't be confronted by. So perhaps one that I should be flagging at this point is the existing treaty network we are committed to. And that is still very much framed on the old classical permanent establishment or physical nexus test that restricts our right to tax in the digital space. Now, that's important for a couple of reasons. The one is, unlike certain other countries, where it is a matter, of course, to override your international treaty obligations with domestic law, that is not really an option for us given the way our constitution is framed, which is that if you have a conflict between domestic law and international law, a court should prefer an interpretation that gives effect to the international law. And if you couple that with the fact that our treaties are incorporated into domestic law, again in terms of the Constitution, in terms of the Income Tax Act and the Value Added Tax Act, you end up with a situation where we have to be very mindful of our treaty obligations. Now, of course, you can design a tax to fall outside of what the treaty covers. But of course, then what you lose is the opportunity to use the treaty to enforce the tax. So for example, many of our treaties have assistance in collection provisions. All of them have exchange of information provisions. And if you're dealing with a tax that doesn't fall under the treaty, obviously those provisions wouldn't apply. Of course, also, if you're dealing with a tax that doesn't fall under a treaty, you're likely to have a situation where, conceptually at least, you can have double taxes arising with respect to a company's operations, and that's as undesirable as double non-taxation. So just some of the challenges that we do have. Now, with respect to domestic e-commerce or digitalization, that's relatively easy for SARS. Because we have sight of both sides of the transaction. We have the supplier and the consumer in South Africa. So it slots in fairly nicely into our normal enforcement efforts, our normal legislation. And the real issue comes into place once you start going cross-border. Now, it may seem like not a lot has been happening, but again, if you move on to page two of the short notes that was sent through, you'll see that a fair amount is happening. We have the multilateral instrument, which South Africa was one of the first countries to sign, which addresses some of the treaty-related aspects, not the fundamental issues, but for example, you have situations where an offshore vendor of goods would set up a warehouse in your country and to obviously speed up delivery times, and that would fall under what is known as the preparatory and auxiliary exclusion, so it didn't qualify as a permanent establishment. The multilateral instrument attempts to address that kind of fragmentation of operations to sidestep the rules. Again, doesn't touch the underlying principle, which is what the new work is trying to do, but it does try and close some of the gaps in the old principle. Now, given that we do have this concept of permanent establishment and a physical presence in South Africa, what does SARS do about that? Now, that is something that we do audit, and we have, as you'll see on page three of the short note, we've even litigated around this, where we had people who were in the country said, well, we don't have a permanent establishment in the country. We're not here for long enough. We don't have sufficiently a permanent presence in this country. We don't rise to the threshold of being a permanent establishment. We disagreed. We took it to court. We won. And we've introduced reporting rules to try and keep a better handle on those kinds of situations. When we get into the e-commerce space or the digitalized economy space, again, we do have fairly well-known players that have offices in this country. Their argument is obviously that those offices are not sufficient to create a permanent establishment. That may or may not be so, but it is something SARS has to check, and that is something that SARS is checking, and I'm aware of cases that are underway as we speak. When you look at some of the aspects that were looked at to counter some of the difficulties around digitalization, one of them was controlled foreign corporation rules, and what's interesting there is that South Africa's rules are one of the benchmarks in the international community. So again, we're not resting on our laurels here. We do work with what we have. Turning then into the VAT space, where we've had quite a lot of movement. Here we were very fortunate to be able to pick up quickly on the international trend that was emerging back in 2013. And so we came in. Now, of course, part of the issue with coming in early is you tend to come in a little modestly, which is exactly what we did. We came in with a relatively short list of goods that we were looking for, services that we were looking for, and taxing. And we brought that in, and if you have a look at, I think it's top of page six of the note, you'll see we started off with around half a billion rand. In 2016-17, that had grown to a billion rand in 2018-19. Now, the reason 2018-19 is an interesting point to look at is that in 2018, it was announced in the budget review that South Africa would be looking at extending that list. So that's something that we did after a good deal of public consultation. And gotcha. That came into force on the 1st of April 2019. And there you will see that as a result of that extension, the revenue grew to 5 billion rand odd in 2019-20. Substantial increase in the number of participants. And if you go back a little bit in the notes, you'll see that SARS has been adhering to what is considered international best practice about reaching out to these players, consulting with them, bringing them into the net. And it's quite important that we do the best we can to make it easy for people to come in, because we're always confronted with the difficulty that they're not, strictly speaking, inside our taxing jurisdiction. So we can follow up where treaties are in place that would cover something and you have an international consensus. Obviously, the other country may assist you, but still, that's the difficult way. So the preferred way is to get voluntary compliance. And that again speaks to SARS's strategy for the coming years, which is to make it easy for people to comply and then to enforce where they do not. And that is reflected in the numbers that you see there. So we've had a very significant growth. Then just to wrap up with some perceptions of the OECD process, which I have been involved in from time to time. What is very interesting about that process currently is that many of the dividing lines that you would expect to see between developed and developing countries are blurred in this process because, as has been pointed out in to the Tani's presentation, we see several OECD countries fragmenting away from the sort of proposals that are being put on the table, which indicates that even within the OECD, there are differing views as to how you should approach this. And that has made the discussions very complicated because you have many different points of views in the room. And part of what makes it complicated is that you have to think about what's going on here, which is that you're reallocating some of the taxing rights to the market jurisdiction. And so when you see things like extractive industries are excluded, as a country with very strong extractive industries, that's probably a good thing because that means less income, which would be in South Africa, is likely to be allocated out to the market jurisdiction. So you need to consider the exclusions quite carefully to see who does it benefit, because at the end of the day, the size of the cake is the size of the cake and how it gets sliced up is what the issue is at the moment. And that is what's making this discussion so very, very complex. One last point, just to add on to something that Momo made, is that the United States is of course also coming in on protecting its players when they are in the international space. He mentioned the interaction that was taken with France, where France essentially held off on the collection of its digital services tax because of the potential for substantial duties being raised on its products in the US. I note that last week the US has indicated it has initiated investigations in that regard against Austria, Brazil, the Czech Republic, India, Indonesia, Italy, Spain, Turkey, and the United Kingdom. And then just for good measure, they're also looking at the European Union as a whole with respect to digital services taxes that are either in force or being contemplated. So yet another complicating factor that we need to bear in mind when considering how to move forward. And with that, Chair, I will hand back.
Thank you, Frans. Please, National President Saad, when you're speaking, switch on your camera. Okay, over to members. You've up to 3 minutes, including myself. And then we'll hand to the chair. Right, go for it. Who wants to speak? So far, I haven't, in the meeting chat section, seen any hands up, nor have I received any from Nkululeko. But perhaps you can just, through your audio, let us know who wants to speak. Nobody. Are there any questions, comments, contributions?
Nothing on my side.
I see Mr. Shivambu. Yes, go ahead, Floyd. You don't have to take 3 minutes in that case because nobody else wants to speak. So you can take 5 if you want. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the presentations. I think that the discussions on the whole digital economy and revenue collection should also involve the Department of Trade and Industry, because in terms of the products and services that are digitally traded in South Africa, there are certain regulatory aspects that necessarily must be enforced by trade and industry, like the standard measure of the products that are traded here, like what the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications would do like what the Consumer Commission would do as well. So there are those aspects that are also important, because if South Africa has agreed to open the digital space for trading of goods and services, it must utilize its existing legislations and systems to make sure that whoever consumes in that particular space is protected maximally. I think that is an obligation of the state, of a democratic constitutional state, to then deal with that aspect. And secondly is that I think there must be a proper interpretation of sections 231, 232 and 233 of the constitution in terms of what happens when there's a conflict between international and domestic laws. So that we would, because I heard one of the presenters saying here that what takes prominence is international law. I don't think that is a proper interpretation, because section 231 says that whenever there's conflict, like the constitution becomes the foundation and national legislation becomes the foundation that overrides the others. Laws that are inconsistent with our own domestic laws. I think that there must be a proper understanding of that context, because I would want to propose that the revenue collector and ourselves in Parliament, we should initiate a unilateral process on the maximal collection of revenue from digital economy. Because if we do not do so and await the OECD, we're not going to go anywhere. In the same way, there's not been an effective legislative and policy framework to maximally collect taxes from mostly multinational corporations that are involved in base erosions and profit shifting. Why? Because we almost wholly depends on the OECD. Majority of the participants in that platform are the beneficiaries of tax avoidance. Like Europe with Luxembourg and a variety of other tax havens are the biggest beneficiaries of tax avoidance and all these things that we've identified before. And I would suppose that even in this context, they seem to be an expectation that Europe or the OECD process is going to be our savior. I don't think that is going to be the case. Let's enact...
You're at 3 minutes, but look, the other speaker, but you can take another minute and we'll come back to you. I don't think there's enough speakers here to warrant restricting people to 3 minutes, but to be fair, so take another minute or so and we'll come back to you.
Yes, so I'm saying that like we need to enact our own legislation and in terms of what should happen. And because the reality is that a lot of economic activity is going to happen in the digital space, and if we do not have a clear guideline and legislation that is enforceable in that platform, we're going to erode completely the revenue base, and that in a subsequent future is going to undermine the legitimacy of the state, because it will not have enough resources to meet the basic commitments that it has of salaries, of social grants, of provision of basic services that are needed. So we need to pursue national legislation and of course with our own interpretation of how the constitution is applied and an understanding of how international law applies, because the United Nations has taken a resolution that nationalities have got a sovereign right to maximally collect taxes out of the businesses that happen in their territories. I don't know why that can be in conflict of international law if we were to pursue national legislation to maximally collect revenue here in South Africa from these businesses, because there is so many things that are sold by Amazon, there's Uber Eats, and even domestic retailers, they use that and then pay tax in return. So we must then enact...
That's it, thank you. Okay, thank you very much. We'll come back to you. Look, anybody else can also take 4:15, okay, to be fair. So the next is Kenny Morolong. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Kenny, are you there?
Can you hear me? Well, thank you very much.
I don't want you to, if you don't have to, but I mean, fairness, you're also entitled to it. Okay, bye.
Thank you very much.
Look, Chair, there's a concern that without an internationally accepted approach on digital taxation, the unilateral approach could actually discourage investment. Is this a concern that we should entertain if you want to go the unilateral route? Two, we have a comprehensive cost and benefit analysis if you go the unilateral route. I'm asking these questions, Chair, as I think we're...
No problem. Can you please put on your mic? Is your mic on? I'm sorry, your video. Video.
No, it is not on, Chair. I'm struggling with it.
Can members kindly do so, please? And in Kuleleko, can you nudge them to do so? Thank you.
Okay. So, Chair, I'm asking these questions as I think waiting for the amendment of WTO and lobbying other organizations might just be delaying us further and impacting our revenue negatively. But at the same time, I also worry about the consequences of unilateral tax initiatives on the digital economy. So it will really help if we can get a balanced view that could consider the trade-offs. Second, Chair, I believe that we should endeavor to build human capacity for tax administration. And I think that we should leverage from banks and advisory firms. I think it's wrong for us to assume that we don't have capacity in the country. While most of it is sitting in accounting and advisory firms, this should be absorbed in the public service. I thank you.
Kelly, are you there? Kelly?
I'm done, Chef.
Are you done? Can you please, there he is. Please put your audio on because I'm being harassed by the committee secretary. Right, go ahead, Mr. Ryder.
Thank you, Ryder. Thank you very much, Chip. I hope that it holds because the connection is not great. My question really is probably to Treasury, and I mean the PBO's presentation. When spoke several times about fairness and the principle of being fair when applying taxation, and what I wanted to ask is, in terms of the digital economy and the move towards digital economy, we've still got a legacy of some of the old exchange control regulations that remain in place. Now some are applied quite strongly and others are not applied at all.
Right. We're losing you. I'm told this meeting is being cast over, I think, 40 channel, channel 408, and the media as well as the committee section is now harassing me to harass you. Please put your video on, please. Is there some problem with your side? Yes.
Jefferson, it's not advisable to always insist on video because the video affects the quality of the audio.
Yes, I understand. Yeah, you may well be right. I don't know what to do because the committee section and the others are WhatsApping me all the time about it. I'm doing what they're asking. But there is. Oh, look, can we please use both the video and the audio? But if you get a better audio by switching the video off, as Mr. Chivambu says, please do that. Thank you.
Okay. So if I can continue then, just to hear what the proposed future is for exchange control regulations. We have this legacy. They're not really applied as stringently as they used to be. And there's certainly a lack of fairness in the way that exchange control is being applied these days. So are we phasing exchange control out? Is that the intention? Because really, in a digital era, I think retention of some of them is I don't want to say farcical, but I mean that it just doesn't sit well in terms of fairness and applying things fairly. Thanks, Chair.
Next I see from here is Dion George. Am I right in Kuleleko?
Yes, Chair. Firstly, thanks very much for the presentation. It was interesting. What I want to know is, obviously, in the coronavirus world and then the post-coronavirus world, we're going to see fundamental changes to our economy. A lot more is happening online, etc. We all know this. So I want to know from SARS whether you are contemplating, or from the Treasury, to to find out whether you're contemplating changing quite dramatically, that so much is not going to be physical, most likely. So that's the one thing. The other thing is that allied to that is clearly we've seen during this crisis is that the informal economy is probably a lot bigger than we thought. I mean, we always knew that. Maybe there was undercounting, etc. But it's very clear that there's an economy that thrives that isn't measured and isn't taxed. So my question is, are you doing any work on that as well, given that we now have maybe an opportunity to measure it more effectively? So I want to know, is in the informal economy, are we doing work to measure that better and then tax that more efficiently? And then also whether there's a plan to create a package in preparation for the new world. Thank you.
Thank you, Dion. The next person, well, we come back to Floyd, because look, nobody else is coming in. So Floyd, you have another 3 minutes. Go for it. Thank you.
Just quickly, do you know the danger of not having national legislation now is that even those
please put your camera on. Yes. I'm just being pushed by the committee's section. I'm doing what I'm asked to do.
I've tried, Chair. It is not going through. I don't know what is the problem.
Yes, I actually think there's some problem with this and connection as a whole, because I'm also seeing others are battling and they're sending me messages. So can the ICT people help? In the meanwhile, those who manage the ICT, can you put a photograph of Floyd on as if nobody knows what he looks like? And he has changed dramatically since we last saw him. So put it on, please. Photograph. Thank you.
Yes. Now, I was saying, Chair, that the danger of not having legislation that maximally collects revenue from the digital economy is that those who are trading from brick and mortar businesses now, which is the exclusive space for revenue collection in the current legislation, would easily say that my business is digital, it's delivery, you don't have to come there and everything else, and then they set up the receiving accounts of those monies elsewhere. Meaning that even the existing revenue base will gradually be eroded. I would be interested to know currently as to where does Pick and Pay, Woolworths, ShopRite collect the revenue of their online trading businesses? Because they seem to be shifting towards that, and that is going to be part of the economic architecture of South Africa moving on. So revenue will be significantly challenged if we do not have a clearer framework in terms of what do we do with the goods and products and services that are traded within South Africa, because it is wrong, it is unethical, it's everything wrong that we exchange goods and services, we buy goods and services, people work, and then whoever is selling those goods and services is not paying VAT, is not paying any income tax. That will undermine the revenue capacity of the state. So a legislation is important to enact that specifically says that whichever service is rendered in South Africa, whichever good is traded in South Africa, should be taxed for the purpose of collecting maximal revenue for the state in its entirety. Because if we do not do so, the revenue collection is going to be affected. And coupled with the fact that in any way the economy is going to shrink now, it's going to be much more devastating and can collapse the state, because it has got far much more serious obligations. Because the day you are unable to pay social grants, due to low or no revenue collection, is the day South Africa is going to ban, and you will not be able to do anything about that. So that is one of the issues that we must take into serious consideration when we deal with all these considerations. Chair, thanks. We can't hear you, Chair. You're still muted.
Nice, Chair. Thanks for that. Yes, I was saying that, look, there aren't any more people signaling they want to speak. Look, am I right? From our side, meaning the committee members, both committees. In which case, perhaps I should keep it open that once we've got the answers from the three participants outside Parliament, Perhaps people can come into this space. Now, for my side, my 3 minutes, Nkululeko just monitor me. Firstly, I want to ask Treasury, NSARS, but perhaps Treasury more, the WTO memorandum you are meant to present to them, given the disadvantages we experience here in South Africa, did you take it to them in March 2020? And if not, when is it going to happen? And if so, what's the outcome? Secondly, I'm a bit bemused, actually, about the conflict between international and national law. Floyd and others have drawn attention to that. I largely agree with the set of questions raised so far. Then, obviously, there's a very clear interlink, if you like, between the illicit economy and the digital economy. So we can't deal with the first without also tackling the latter, and the latter also assists and facilitates the first. Then on protection of SMMEs, I'd like to know more. What does it all mean, given how digitalized our economy in this country and other developing countries are becoming in view of the COVID-19 context? I mean, you know, the e-commerce in the Europe and the West and Northern countries far more than us before COVID-19. But now so many of us who previously, including myself, were not online, are now online to even secure groceries. Then on the issue of, I'm surprised really, I don't fully understand this issue, and I will speak offline, about the conflict between international and local law and what it all means. I'm very struck by Mr. Shivambu's inputs. From what I can tell, you know, a lot of what he's saying is useful to at least give answers to. Then on the issue of, you know, colleagues, I think for us, I can't see my handwriting. What does this mean? All right, I'll leave that. Look, colleagues, very quickly, the issue is that, you know, we have to, in our report to Parliament, the supplementary fiscal framework, focus more actively on the digital economy. We need to take resolutions in that regard and recommendations. I think we've been errant in the fifth term of Parliament, Comrade Joe. We didn't focus enough on this. Now we have to. And I think in our joint report of the two committees, we need to give serious attention to it. The Bureau must also make further inputs and our own research. So I'll hand over to you now, Comrade Joe, to give your input, 3 minutes too, presumably, and then you'll round up the meeting and suggest a way forward if you like. So I'll withdraw now and hand over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade Yunis and the colleagues. I would also like to welcome the inputs from PBO, National Treasury, and SARS. I think the inputs that have been made by colleagues should be taken very serious by the National Treasury. Because if we talk about the acceleration of the fourth industrial revolution, does it mean that it will come with negative impacts in regard to tax or revenue collection? And the point has been raised by colleagues that it will be wrong that we leave the economy to be on the hands of the market forces and the state just be the bystander. The governing party has adopted a policy in regard to the developmental state. What it means is that the state should be an active player in the economy. The attitude that every time when we discuss something, we start by saying America won't allow this, America won't allow that. We know the policy of the current regime in America to make America great on the expense of other nation states. We don't take mandate from the president of America. We take mandate from the citizens of South Africa. That is very important. We still have our own sovereignty, and that has to be guarded jealously so. So we should not lose sight of the fact that we are a developmental state that should be able to take decisions in the best interest of our people. Because if we leave things as they are, the socio-economic impacts are going to be very, very negative. Already this economy, even before the lockdown, we were almost, I think we are on a, what is that rating agency level, junk status, something like that, which means that even our creditworthiness status out there in the world has gone down. And it has got serious impact. People are losing jobs. It's not a theory. Some of us are here at home in the Limpopo. We know of people not going back to Johannesburg or Gauteng to work because they have received retrenchment notices because of the lockdown and the credit status. And it's going to be worse by this digitalization of the economy. And you can see when you drive between Pretoria and the airport, those warehouses there, which are serving as conduit for online shopping, for instance, have got big impact on retail business. So it will not be right for us to say we can't do anything. Why did people vote us if we can't do anything? We have to do something. We have to make our voice heard. As we speak, we are chairing the AU. How are we taking advantage of such platforms like chairing the AU out there? AU should become a major force in the world in terms of multilateral negotiations. I know the Department of Transport, for instance, at some stage amended the transport legislation so as to regulate Uber. Because Uber is just operating without boundaries, without permits. They do things as they wish. But the relevant department or the land function amended the legislation. So it's not correct to say that we can't do anything in terms of legislation and policy. I don't think so. What I will say, Chairperson, in closing, is that National Treasury and SARS, well, this was not an academic summit, should come back with clear recommendations in regard to policy and legislative framework as to what is it that is going to be done to regulate the digital economy. I think that's very important. We'll deal with these other multilateral negotiations which are out there in the WTO. Because once they use that, the few business that we have here in South Africa, loyally so paying taxes, continue to be eroded by those who are not paying taxes. This owner of Amazon, I think today is the richest person in the world. Is it Bezos, something like that, on the expense of our businesses here in South Africa. So many people buy books through Amazon, even here in this country, but he doesn't pay tax. So, simple, Comrade Karim, tell National Treasury and SARS to come back in the next meeting with clear legislative and policy framework to say this is what we are going to do to deal with the challenge that we have. But just to come here and just say we can't do anything because there's a WTO moratorium, America is saying this, I don't think we can go to Parliament and put that as a report and go public and tell the world that we can't do anything as legislators. Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson and colleagues.
All right, maybe I'll just round up this section and back to you. But let's hand over to, firstly, Dumisani from PBO, and then Treasury and SARS. Can you respond, please? Please put your camera on to the extent you can. I think there's a more general problem with connectivity today. So take that into account, too. Thank you. Okay, go for it, Dumisani. 5 minutes or so, or slightly more if you like, because we've got time.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chair. And thank you for the comments and the questions. I don't know if I'm clear now, Chair. I do apologize earlier about... thank you so much. Actually, I was telling myself earlier, Chair, I still had time to finish my presentation. The Chair, one point, you know, I want to start with, it's in our general view, a general point that the importance of international tax system, it's often written about a lot in literature, to have a very fair system. And I think what we're trying to emphasize in the brief, it's largely to indicate that the system as it is, you know, it has not been geared up to cope with a digitalized economy. And the fact is the fact that we will see a lot of digitalization of economic activities, which requires certainly policymakers and different thinking around it. And I mean, I keep on emphasizing the importance of the literature and on some of these aspects. I mean, I attended a discussion earlier at the beginning of the year where some of the colleagues at the university said, look, actually, there probably need to be a point where many countries start thinking unilaterally, which will force more countries agreeing that actually that won't work or to work. But there need to be that realization that many countries actually are frustrated with the current system, particularly small countries or developing countries. And I agree with a colleague from SARS, actually, that there's been so much disagreement in terms of the current proposed multilateral system or multilateral proposals, the inclusive framework at the OECD. But I think as part of the presentation, one point I said in summer, I wanted to say in the summary was that in its current form, the draft inclusive framework, it makes it very impossible to implement without higher costs for small countries. And that's the part, of course, I understand, you know, there need to be discussions going forward. But as in current form, which was expected to finalize by the end of this year, it's quite expensive to implement. I mean, this duplicates the tax system. The way it is in current form, it will duplicate the international tax system. It will lead to parallel systems working at the same time. It's very, very complicated. And its effect in current form, it will certainly make it difficult for small countries like us, as Honorable Mulolongwe has mentioned, the issue of capacity. Without capacity, we have capacity, Honorable Mulolongwe. I agree, we have got capacity. But of course, with digitalization of the economy, you need more capacity where it's no longer about being a tax expert, but you also need to understand how the technology works and how some of these digitalization processes take place. As I emphasized at the beginning of my presentation, that it's more about the process and the whole value chain system, you know, and realizing that the policy response needs to also understand that and react towards that process. So look, this is a value chain of digitalization of the economy. And what part of that can a country like South Africa develop policies to respond to each part of it, and that also requires skills, as Honorable Long. I certainly agree with you, we need more skills in enhancement and more support in institutions like Treasury, SARS, and trying to build more skills to respond in getting more revenue into digitalized economy. So the fact remains we have not have mechanism at this stage to raise revenue from the digitalization economy. And I mean, it's written about literature, it's very strong. And of course, a lot of work. I mean, I want to clarify, I mean, the brief doesn't suggest there has not been work. There's certainly been a lot of work by SARS and other entities and tried to close the gaps in that regard. But I think we've all been dribbled, many countries have been dribbled by what has happened rapidly, which has exposed some of the weakness in the legislation. In this regard, there's a point I want to comment on is on the investment, whether the unilateral approach will disincentivize investments into the country. I think when you look at the literature, chair on investments, the you know international investments are structured by it's very complex in a way, and certainly tax law, tax policies are some of the measures that some of the incentives, but of course, you know, when you disaggregate the understanding, the legislation has not been a priority, a main factor in investments, mostly about potential of making a value in the invest in the country, and I think that area, you know, we need to also understand that it's not only going to be that because you have got a unilateral unilateral tax policy, then you deter investments. It's very broad and that's very complex. And I think the discussion be broader, should not only be narrow in that sense, because certainly the investment, potential investment literature show us that there are more other aspects that lead to investments than just only the tax as an instrument in that regard. I think that's what I want to comment on, Chair. Thanks.
Thanks, Dumisani. Treasury and SARS, I think you get the drift, right? So people are saying, yes, maybe you've done quite a bit, but you need to do substantially more. I think people are saying there seems to be a reasonable consensus on this, that more needs to be done, more assertively, in a more progressive approach, and I think more urgently. Thanks. Over to whoever. Is it Momo? Okay. We'll start with Momo.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I mean, let me start by saying, you know, both trends are never soft on trying to collect land, and we look at every way we can to collect revenue where it's really due. So we certainly don't have a can-do attitude on this. We do as much as we can to collect all revenue. I think the first point to make is, you know, I think the whole...
Momo, we're beginning to lose you. Maybe we can get you now. Yes, go for it now. You better. Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm saying better. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Now it's better. Thank you.
Okay. I think the point is that the term digital economy covers a lot of different types of activities. So, for example, the one type of digital is where people buy their music or ebooks, and they buy it from a U.S. provider like Amazon. Okay, some of them just come onto your iPad or your Huawei phone or electronic tablet or phone. Some of it involves an actual delivery. So, and that's why if you look at the note that SARS has provided, if you buy a book or some object and it's a good, it gets transported, it comes through, and there's customs and excise and VAT that can be imposed. Then there's many companies within South Africa that do what we would consider non-e activities. You actually go and buy and actually have e services, or they come and deliver, like we've seen during this lockdown. For many of those companies, the point is that they file returns with their domestic providers, and the entire tax system for corporates is largely based on what profits they make and their tax. And as you know, it's a self-declaratory system, but subject to checks by SARS and so on. So these are different types of activities, and obviously for different types, we do cover those bases, and they are currently taxed. The most difficult is, of course, where it's for services and it's done by a company that's overseas. That does require us to have an international agreement. And I should add that it's not a WTO agreement we're talking about. We are talking about double tax agreements and your multilateral tax agreements that we're trying to get in this instance, like you have on the current reporting framework where we get information on our residents, their overseas, their income and so on, or their banks are countries, do the country-by-country reporting and so on. So we're continually thinking of mechanisms, and in some cases, it's almost by definition, it's going to be almost impossible to collect unless you have those agreements. So it's in our interest, as it is in everybody else's interest, to push as hard as possible that we get those agreements in place. And I think that I'm a bit more optimistic on the OECD process currently, because many of the big powers themselves are pushing, because they see activities in the other countries that, and where these companies pay shockingly low taxes to come to the party, particularly after 2008 when we've seen a serious decline in revenue. So there's a lot that's happening, and we are currently collecting taxes from e-services over and above, and we do it through VAT, through customs and excise, but we know that our coverage is not comprehensive. But I'll let Yanga come in, but before she does, let me just say on the question on exchange controls, the Honourable Member just looks at an extra E in the budget review. You will see that we've moved on from those kinds of approaches, and I'm not sure the two are really connected. There's a lot of trade flows and payments that take place. There may be, for specific instruments, some kind of, not barriers, but reporting frameworks and so on. But I don't believe that's really a big issue when it comes to the payment of services. In fact, generally your payment systems in South Africa are well geared to pay for such services. And to the extent that such payment is made, that is an area that we can obviously look at for the tax system as well, to the extent that there's no agreement. But I would refer the Honourable Member to an actual E on that score. Yanga, do you want to come in just on some of the other details and some of the meetings? Sorry, Chair, Yanga had difficulty getting connected, and she's not connected on her own name, so don't get confused, but she's told me she's online. So I'll let her come in to answer some of the other questions before SARS answers.
Yeah, I know we're always happy to see Yanga, but before she comes in, Jordan's very shy this morning for whatever reason. But he slid this question in a comment. He says, whoever wants to answer this, it doesn't have to be a woman, it could be Yanga or Franz. Digital economy also includes online gambling. For some reason, DTI has taken the view that online gambling should be illegal and therefore not taxed, even though it is now ubiquitous in South Africa, meaning everywhere. We're giving online gambling companies a free ride. If that's true, one can't but agree with Jordan. Who's going to respond to that? Whoever wants to, but please take Jordan into account when you answer your question. Thank you. Who's next?
Chair, just on online gambling, yes, that's something, and especially for overseas online gambling. You know, we agree with the approach that we would prefer that we don't allow a payment system to do that. And we have taken lots of measures to try and identify that. It's not possible to do it on everything, but I think it is possible to do more than we do. But that legislation sits with the DTI. And if you ask me, I would also say that we need to have limits even for domestic online gambling. So that is an area that perhaps we need to intensify our efforts.
Yeah, it's a very useful question, Jordan. Also, you know, the point made by Floyd, I don't know if that was covered and who's going to cover it, but about, I think it implied a need for more concerted cooperation with DTI, obviously, and other departments, needless to say. But, you know, perhaps somebody wants to respond to that at some stage. It doesn't have to be Momo, but whoever. Thanks.
Yes, Chair, I think the whole area of digital commerce involves quite a few departments. Aside from DTI, there's obviously the Department of Communications. So, yes, it does cover many, many departments. And look, there's lots of processes that are in place between departments that take place. But maybe let Yanga come in, Chair. She has really been all covering right. This quite extensively.
One more, these video exchanges, I think, suit you. I'm not sure whether you've doctored the video, but you seem to have a lot more hair on the video than you have in real life. Anyway, I think I should do something about my situation. All right, over to you, Yanga.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I was having difficulty, so I have to use another PC of Nhlanhla, my colleague, so I can't even connect on video. I just want to... Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay. South Africa has been part of the discussions throughout the beginning of BAPS. And it is important to note that we have actioned all the BAPS 15 action points. And even action one, which is taxation of digital economy, we have done it on the VAT side and we're the first ones to do it. But on the income tax side, most countries have not done it. Hence, we are in these discussions. Yes, other countries have introduced unilateral measures. The main problem with taxation of digital economy on the income tax side is that the basis for taxation for income tax purposes is that there should be a nexus in the country before you can tax that business. Meaning that the business, if it's an international business, must be physically present in your country doing business. So in the case of Amazon's, but the basis for taxation of VAT is the sale of goods. Hence, we are able to impose digital taxation on the VAT, based on VAT on the sale of goods from offshore to South Africa. The problem now is that on the issue of income tax, there is no nexus. There is no physical presence. So these companies do sell goods in our country, but they do not have physical presence in our country. So now, what we are doing, because now, as Dr. Jantjies have said, this creates a new taxing right. It changes the basis of international taxation. Because if you are moving to the taxation of digital economy, meaning that you're going to impose taxing rights where there is no physical presence in the country, where there is no nexus. So this is what we are trying to do now with all the discussions that we are having. And that is where the problem is. So yes, other countries have introduced unilateral measures, but it is important to know that few of those that have introduced have collected or have effected those unilateral measures. Because the question that is asked is, how are you going to tax? How are you going to impose the tax if there is no nexus or physical presence? Hence now, then it contravenes some of the double taxation agreements, because the double taxation agreements, they provide the taxing rights and they allocate the taxing rights between the two countries where an international company is operating in one country, whereas the company is the residence of another country but operating business in South Africa, having a physical presence in South Africa. So that is where the problem is. But we hear Parliament when they are saying that they want unilateral measures, but we are hoping that by the end of 2020 or early next year, there will be a consensus-based solution that is taken by all the other countries regarding this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Yanga. I don't think members are immune to the challenges and the need for global cooperation, but I think we're not convinced that everything, so much has to depend on that. There's more we can do, I think, is what we're saying. But look, this is an ongoing discussion, Yanga. We'll come back to you and Treasury and SARS and Dr. Jantjies as well later down the road. Over then to France, is it? Tomasek, is he there? Is France still around?
Yes. I'm here and hopefully my sister can be through with some voice.
Okay.
So on the point that's been raised that the DTI needs to be involved, that's absolutely correct, because they are the department that takes the lead at the WTO if you want to start talking about the moratorium on the taxation of intellectual property. Now, it's an interesting point that, because it is not confined to the digital space. So if you are an importer of, assuming somebody still is, of, say, DVDs, the customs duty that you pay is on the medium, not on the content. So that moratorium is a fairly wide-ranging one, and they would be best placed to speak to the efforts to keep it shorter rather than have it permanent. And I understand there have been some attempts to make that moratorium permanent, which clearly South Africa and India are not in favor of. Another point that was raised was around the informal economy. Now, what has happened as a result of the current challenges we face because of COVID-19 is the various relief packages that have been made available by government. And very frequently, part of that relief package is that the person or the business that is looking for the relief needs to complete a loop with the revenue service. And so that has in fact made for a very useful data source for SARS. For example, the small business department has been very active in ensuring that there is a check against SARS's records so that we can bring people on board and bring them into the more formal part of the economy. There was a concern raised around the taxation of bricks and mortar versus digital in the domestic space. And I think MoMA has already touched on this, but the South African income tax system looks at the income of a resident. So if you are a resident in South Africa, whether you are doing business by way of digital, bricks and mortar, whatever, and you derive gross income from that, you are subject to tax. And you would then claim your deductions, have whatever exemptions are available. But at the end of the day, you are part of the tax system, and SARS looks precisely at that. And by the way, to a point that was made, that makes no difference if you route that receipt through an offshore bank account. So if you were a South African doing business with another South African and you had the payment dropped into your PayPal account, wherever that's based, I think it's Singapore these days, and then routed back to you in South Africa, that is not the issue. You have derived income and you are taxable on it. The only issue there may be, well, one of ease of audit, perhaps, but even in those cases, because of the double taxation agreements, exchange of information, the common reporting standard that MoMA has mentioned, it is a lot easier now to follow up on offshore bank accounts than it was in the past. So even there, the ability to enforce is much, much stronger than it used to be. And just one last point. Whether something is illegal or not does not impact on its taxability. So there are several court cases in that regard. Most classically, the ones that involve pyramid schemes, where SARS sought to tax the promoters and was successful. So illegality is not a bar to taxation. So I'll hand back to that chair.
Thank you. Members, we've got about, 20 minutes left. Is anybody wanting to come back and raise anything else or feels their question has been reasonably answered? Is there anybody in Kululeko? Do you have anybody signaling they want to speak? I don't put in the chat.
Not yet, Chair. Not yet.
All right. I'm going to hand it over to the chair. Only for my part to say, it may be very subjective, but for what it's worth, Mr. Shivambu. Okay, go for it.
I think that we need, as the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Finance said, we need a legislative framework in terms of how do we deal with the digital economy. And in some instances, it can even put the consideration that if Amazon is distributing goods in South Africa, it has to have physical presence so that the regulatory issues that involve the trade and exchange of goods are applicable to it. Like if certain goods that Amazon distributes do not meet the regulatory requirements that are specified in the national regulator of compulsory specifications, there must be some way where someone has got to raise that concern. If the LBS standards are not met, all of those things, it has to be a holistic, integrated legislation that deals with consumer protection, but then much more emphatically deal with revenue collection, because the revenue base inevitably will be threatened significantly by the current economic conditions. I think all of us must get to the situation of accepting that the during and post-corona realities are going to be far much more different from this dancing to the American tune throughout and everything else. We need to have some degree of relative autonomy so that we protect at least the revenue that is being collected now and where possible, try to increase it, because if you are unable to do so, the dangers were already illustrated that the obligations which the state has, it will not be able to meet,
and it is going to destroy the foundation of South Africa. So we need to have legislation that guides all of us in terms of what happens. And of course, we will look into what do international laws say in terms of our legislation, but ultimately we should have our own legislative framework and legislation that must be passed by Parliament to guide and give us space to maximally collect revenue from the digital economy. Thanks.
Okay, National Treasury, what's the problem with what Floyd is proposing and what the co-chair is also saying? And what I think makes sense to me as well. Anybody wants to respond? Yanga, Momo? What's your response for now to this?
Chair, I think we need to then look at what do we regulate, because it's not from the tech side. Remember, the tech side, we are largely taxing the income generated, for example. You know, this gets to, firstly, what can government actually regulate? So, for example, how you access your internet. Obviously, big countries like China and so on are able to separate out and have firewalls between, you know, whether residents have access to Google and so on. In South Africa, I mean, people, you know, it's, I guess it's up to the Department of Communications to regulate how we have access to Amazon. And if people are going to download their music, it's, in this instance, it's not a good at all. So, you know, how do you actually regulate that? And this is a problem, as we've said, it's not unique to South Africa. It gets onto lots of other issues. So, if you want to regulate those practices, it's really about how we deal with the entire web and e-services and so on. Not an area that I have any expertise in. So obviously one needs to look at with other departments. It also then gets into the issues of right of information and access and so on. So there's all kinds of other issues that also come in on these issues. As we've said, when there's a physical good that comes, we obviously have more control. And look, in this instance, I mean, if you look at a big company like Amazon and multinationals, there's a lot to be said for naming and shaming and getting those companies to indicate country by country what taxes they pay. In the first phase, these companies did a lot to avoid paying taxes. This became unpopular. And, you know, a company like Amazon is not popular with the current president in the U.S. as well. But once you take an approach, we've also talked about how countries respond and protect their companies. So, Chair, I'm not really answering the question directly. I'm sort of saying this is a complicated area that goes well beyond the Treasury and gets on to how you regulate access within the internet and how do you, for example, deal with services particularly. Goods are a bit easier to deal with. I think you could separate that. But the more you separate types of purchases, you get arbitrage and all kinds of other perverse outcomes. So it needs to be a very carefully thought through approach. And it doesn't seem to me that aside from the major economies like China and so on, that smaller economies have doing so.
I think people are aware from the committee side, well, I think anyway they are, about the complexities of the issue and the need for several ministries and departments to be involved. But still, it's a feeling that I think is shared, at least for now, among several of the MPs here. It's probably beyond party political divide. It's something we need to come back to. It's something you need to give attention to and work through and come back with more comprehensive answers in the near future. We're at 11:48, so unless there's anybody who wants to desperately raise something, I suggest we draw to a close for now, remembering that we're going to come back to these issues very shortly with the supplementary fiscal framework looming in about 2 weeks or so.
So I don't pick up anybody in Kululeko, am I right? Shall we then draw to a close? I'll hand over to the coach, but before I do, I was saying, subjectively from my side, this matter, given the COVID-19 circumstances, has become far more urgent. And we have to do more. I think that's a consensus. But also it's a very fascinating new area for us, even those who've been around for a long time, including having served in finance in the fifth term of parliament. So it's complex, it's difficult, it's challenging. The PBO and the researchers on our side should also help us to come to our own independent views on these matters. But I think, Comrade Chair, from my side, I'd just like to thank everybody for their cooperation. I feel, Chairperson, that this has been a very, very useful meeting, very stimulating. The quality of the inputs from all the committee members, too, apart from Dr. Jansi and the team from Treasury and SARS, has been great. So I hand over to you. Obviously, COF has this quarterly meeting. And given the COVID-19 rules from above, or norms now, that we should work together, Comrade Jong, the two committees. We will connect with your quarterly meetings where we discuss the digital economy and the illicit economy as well. Thank you. I'll hand back to you and you will decide how to finalize the meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Karim. Let me also welcome Inkosi Buthelezi Shenge. You are welcome. We have been missing you. You haven't been participating on the platform for quite some time. We are told that you have got a problem with connection around Pongola.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for your effort in making sure that I become part of the meeting. I was assisted today, so I'm very happy. From now going forward, I'll be part of the meetings. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for connecting. Thanks, Chairperson. I think, I'm not sure, Chairperson. We might need to have our colleagues from the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee in our next meeting, because lots of things are shifted to the Trade and Industry Portfolio. I think the meeting today was more about being reminded about international protocols, the frustrations that government has. We need a follow-up meeting, Chairperson, surely. My expectations were not met by this meeting because we are complaining about America. We know what China is doing. We need more. Action plan as to what is this government going to do, because as the commissioner has presented the other time, we are expecting a loss of not less than 230 billion rand as a result of a lockdown in regard to tax collection. How are we going to make up for that money? So there are many challenges when it comes to tax collection. But I think today's meeting hasn't covered a wider ground as some of us have expected. It was us being reminded of moratoriums, the challenges that we have in the OECD, the challenge that we have with America. But what is it that this government is going to do to close those gaps? So I will propose, Chair, maybe let's look at that between yourself and myself, that we talk to the colleagues in the trade and industry so that at some stage we have a joint meeting with them so that we deal with this matter further and find a comprehensive solution which is to the best interest of the country. Thanks very much, participants from the PBO National Treasury, SARS and support service from Parliament. Thanks. The meeting is officially adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.